Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dan Dumas to the podcast. Dan serves as senior vice president for institutional administration at Southern Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. He is a popular author, an accomplished teacher, a noted leader and administrator, and personally a very good friend. Dan, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you, Jason. Glad to be here.
You know, I'm reminded, even as I introduce you and welcome to the conversation, of how far back we go. You were my college pastor now nearly 20 years ago, and I first learned to preach and had opportunities to teach and preach under your stewardship and leadership. And so we go way back, and of course, we intersected for a number of years at Southern Seminary also. It's a particular delight, therefore, for me to have this conversation with you today.
Absolutely. Those were two epic years.
That's right. That's right. Well, listen, today we're going to talk about hiring staff well. And this is a podcast typically devoted to preaching specifically and directly, or issues related to preaching. But today is a bit more of a tangent, but an important one, because as I talk to pastors and staff in the churches day in and day out, one of the most vexing challenges for pastors and churches is hiring staff well. How to hire the right staff member, how to find the staff, right staff members to serve around and complement the ministry in the local church. And as one who leads a seminary now and is actively engaged in local church and has been actively engaged in local church ministry, I identify with that concern. Any entity, any ministry, and certainly any church will rise and fall based upon the gifting, the character, the abilities of those entrusted with leadership. You know, as we think about hiring well within the context of the local church, it's no coincidence that, Dan, that I've invited you for this conversation. It's not that I sought to get a bunch of other guests and couldn't line them up, but rather you're at the very top of my list because I've seen you and have known you well for nearly 20 years in the way you've given leadership in significant local churches, local church ministries, and now at Southern Seminary. You build teams well, and you've sought to build teams well. And I know you've given a great deal of thought and intentionality to what it means to hire well and how to hire well, especially within the context of Christian ministries and local churches. So before we move more intentionally to walking through some of these tips, tell me your own story. What brought you a fuller awareness of the need to hire well, and what really has driven you to be a learner in this regard?
Yeah, I think foundationally, Jason, it would be the scriptures that brought that conviction to bear. Primarily, I think the book of Titus, as I see it, it's the church planting manual in the New Testament, and it's clearly a path on building healthy churches and to have them multiply. And what you see there in Titus 1 is the emphasis on healthy leadership or human talent. So the finding, the recruiting, the nurturing of pastors and elders to plant healthy churches. So as Titus unfolds, you know, leadership defines the church, chapter 1. Chapter 2, discipleship, you know, builds the church. And chapter 3, evangelism spreads the church. So the conviction came and the foundation came from the necessity of having healthy leaders, whether that's in the church or building an organization. So a weak church, I think you can look behind a weak church and you'll find weak leaders. Contra a healthy church, you'll find healthy leaders. So I think leadership is absolutely critical and foundational. So finding, recruiting, and nurturing that kind of talent, that kind of leader is critical path in building healthy churches. So it's the foundation of Titus 1.
You know, even as you rehearse this with me, I'm just reminded it's at Midwestern Seminary as I serve here, and again in local church settings also. Whenever there's a vacancy, someone leaves, oftentimes the first reaction is a sense of loss, almost a vexing sense of, oh my goodness, now I got to go find someone. And the challenge of finding the right person, even when you think you found the right person, they may not turn out to be the right person. And we all know those tragic scenarios. But also at the same time, when there's a vacancy, when there's an opening, there's an opportunity to build upon the work of the one who's left the position, to strengthen weaknesses that person, like every person, has. And so it does present its opportunity as well. Let me ask the question for you this way. Why should pastors be fanatically committed to hiring well?
Well, I think because if they don't, it's going to debilitate or retard the church's, you know, ability to make maximum impact. I mean, I think the hiring process is just critical path and foundational. The team is everything. You know, as Ecclesiastes 4 states, you know, two are better than one. So when you add a person, you add a leader, there should be a better return, you know, for that, a better investment, more fruit. Contra, if you don't make a critical hire or you make a mishire, a little leaven leavens the whole lump, right? It becomes toxicity and it becomes problematic in how you build a healthy church. So you don't want it. I know you grew up boating. I love boating. You don't want to be driving across the lake with your anchor out and just slowing the whole movement across the lake down, you know, and causing drag on the ministry as well. When you make a bad hire, that's what you'll do. You'll cause drag on the ministry. And so I think it's extremely important to make good, godly hires. And I think it's critical path in building healthy churches.
Now, you have kindly enumerated 10 tips for hiring well, and we'll move to those here in a few moments. But before we get to that, and before we get to more to the practical tips of how to do this, unpack for us a bit what a good hire looks like. In other words, and we realize, look, ministry is a contextual reality. Every church is different. Every city is different. Every nation is different. And so there are geographical contextual realities. There are, even on the ground, different age realities, different needs of the church or ministry, different leadership styles at the top, which would therefore necessitate or prompt different giftings in the support staff around that lead pastor, that lead elder. So there's a lot going on, and I don't want to over-principalize this. However, we can principalize a lot of this, generic principles that apply in most every context. So before we get again to tips into how to hire well, tell me, within the context of the local church, what does a good hire look like?
Yeah, I think what you're after there is making sure they have good, you know, gospel instincts. I mean, do they have the foundations of leadership down, you know? And so there are many principles and attributes I think we could go after. There's a few that kind of bubble up as priorities for me, things that are fresh on my mind, things that I'm thinking about now and regularly. For example, knowing how to lead both up and down within an organization or within a church, I think that's massively important. And by that, I mean leading up, everyone's under authority, that person that is acquired to be on the team knows that they should never surprise their leaders. They're truthful, they're clear, they own error, you know, there's just no surprises. And that's how you learn to lead up, for example. That's one way. And then the ability to lead down. So they also have to lead the team, roll up their sleeves, get dirty, and so they can't sabotage their team by regularly throwing them under the bus. But rather, okay, let's fix it. We own it, and we move on, kind of thing. So instincts like knowing how to both lead up and down within a church or within an organization, I think is absolutely important. That'd be one. Two, I think they need to understand modern leadership theory. So, for example, I want them to be able to think outside the box. So a problem comes up, a situation arises. I don't want them to just kind of, you know, take in what they normally would take in or live within the box. I want them to think outside the box, kind of like when you go to a restaurant, you know, and it's a one-off restaurant, and the chef's back there, and he's a noteworthy kind of chef. You know, my instinct is to kind of want to order off the menu, like, hey, surprise us. We're on date night tonight. Surprise us. I'm not going to order anything on the menu. Be creative, right? So the ability for that leader to order off the menu, so to speak, would be a distinction of modern leadership theory.
Let me interrupt you there. This is very helpful what you're doing, so I want you to continue the train of thought after this brief digression. How much of that is theoretical and how much of that is intuitive? Meaning, I totally concur with what you're saying. You want people that understand the 21st century and leadership principles within the 21st century. I'm not necessarily interested if they've read all the books, you know, the books, and there is an endless stream of books on leadership and managerial theory coming out. But I certainly want them to have those instincts. Now, the former will often inform and shape the latter, but some guys have the good instincts, so they're not reading everything. So I'm curious, even from my own personal edification here, how much are you looking for them being conversant with authors and with books and with perhaps curriculum or subject matter? How much are you looking for a set of instincts that reflect that they're a leader fit for the modern era?
Yeah, to me, it's they've got to own it, you know, and I think it's kind of upstream from even what you just asked to they have lived in it. They're from a culture of modern leadership thinking. They're kind of emergent leaders themselves, you know, so I'm looking for things that I think the average person isn't looking for when I'm making a critical hire. I'm looking for, do they have a fire in their belly? To me, passion matters. You know, I'm not just hiring the pedigree. I'm hiring the passion. Do they have the necessary passion? Because I can teach them skills, you know, but do they have the necessary passion, the necessary, you know, kind of relentlessness and tenacity and work ethic that is required of kind of modern leaders? Are they going to execute? They're going to be, you know, dogged in their pursuit of making things right and excellent. So I'm looking for big kind of gospel themes like excellence. Do they understand excellence? Do they understand passion? Do they understand gospel? They're driven by these big macro themes that are not just principles. They're in the DNA. They're in the fiber. They're in the makeup of the person, so that regardless if you put them in a crisis or just a simple problem, their instincts are to always, you know, kind of respond in this way. So to throw them a problem, they're not going to panic. They're going to say, okay, how do we solve it? How do we think outside the box? You know, we've always done it this way. Let's try this. Let's do this. You know, that kind of, you know, ability to have good discernment. And I think it's learned over time. And that's why the culture of an organization that thinks in these categories, is critical in building a healthy church. It's the culture and the mindset there.
Very good. This is helpful. Now, before we move into tips for hiring well, flesh out a touch more these marks of a good hire. I know, obviously, character, for instance, comes into play here. So flesh out a touch more before we move into enumerating tips for hiring well.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, for me, character's king, Jason. I just integrity matters. It's foundational, especially in Christian leadership, but I think in all leadership, whether you're the president of the United States or a pastor of a local church, I mean, character's king. You see those emphasis in 1 Timothy 3 and again in Titus 1, that God's more concerned with us being than he is doing. And so I tell our team here at Southern Seminary that the most important thing that happens any given day happens actually before you ever arrive on campus. It happens in your own, you know, walk with the Lord, your own devotion, your own sanctification process that you're engaged in, all the spiritual disciplines that you can deploy and the means of grace to get there. So to us, when I'm hiring, I'm looking for character. Character is going to be king because I'm hiring the person, you know, not just the pedigree or not just a resume. I'm after that person, that they're a man or woman of God, you know, first and foremost. So character's king. I think a second, and it's very close to this, is not only do you understand modern leadership theory, but in some ways they get ancient leadership theory, which is servant leadership, right? So they get John 13, you know, when Jesus washed the disciples' feet. I think he permanently placed within all leaders a philosophy there that you're going to lead by serving. And then you add to that Philippians 2, 3, and 4, where you esteem others better than yourself. You're in a constant, perpetual state of giving yourself away. There's nothing you are unwilling to do kind of leadership and leadership mindset. So when you take the integrity piece and attach that to the servant piece, I mean, right there, that's a dense, dense foundation that you can build the skills and the instincts upon. But if you lack a servant-mindedness and you lack integrity, I think it's going to affect the foundation. It's going to have cracks in it, and therefore you're not going to build a superstructure of leadership instincts on top of that weak foundation.
That is very well put. Now, you sent me a sneak peek, and I got to tell you, I love this list. You crafted a list of 10 tips for hiring well, and I want to give the second half of this conversation specifically to this. And again, I'm just thrilled to have received this before the conversation began, because I've already been encouraged by it, challenged by it, and really refreshed by it as to things I need to be thinking of as I seek to hire. And again, we're thinking specifically not just about hiring in general, but hiring for Christian ministries, and most especially pastors hiring well within the context of the local church. Support staff, other pastors, other team members. How do we help pastors to hire well? So, Dan, you have a list of 10 tips to hiring well, and I just want to tee you up to walk through these, and I'll ask you some questions along the way, and we'll banter about a bit. But I want to spend about the next 12 or 15 minutes just working this list together, these 10 tips for hiring well.
Absolutely. And this is especially true, this list of churches or nonprofit organizations. That's kind of the space that I've lived in these last 25 years of ministry. So I think they're applicable for church or marketplace. I think that both audiences would find favor with this particular list. So let me dive in and start with the first one here, and then we can banter and talk as we work our way through this list. I think churches especially struggle with this one. I think churches, by reflex and by nature, they hire fast and they fire slow. And I see this in nonprofit organizations as I go out and coach and consult. I see this on a regular weekly basis, right? So the principle is this. I think we ought to hire slow and fire fast, meaning we take our time, we do our due diligence, we do our homework, right, and we make a good, calculated, thoughtful, you know, with eyes wide open hire. However, if there is a mishire there, we fire fast. And I think we see just the opposite of that in churches. I think we hire fast. We feel like we've got to get somebody on board. We just got to plug a hole. The water's leaking out of the ship, and so we're just going to plug the hole, and then we regret it. And it wreaks havoc in the organization. So my first principle, Jason, is hire slow, fire fast.
I'm going to interrupt you here. Yeah. I was visiting with someone just the other day, and I was reflecting upon my time at Midwestern, nearly 4 years now. We're talking about personnel and hiring the right team. Mm-hmm. And they asked me about when you have to let someone go. And look, it just happens, whether it's in the church or a Christian institution. It just happens. Things happen. Sometimes it's their fault. Sometimes it's your fault. Sometimes it's no one's fault. But whether it's a matter of character or competence, just sometimes you have to move people on. And they asked me, they said, have you had to let anybody go that in hindsight you regret? And I said, well, there are people, sure, I regret that the disruption caused their life, or I regret that. There's no pleasure in any of this. But I said, there hasn't been anyone we've had to transition that in hindsight I thought that was the bad move to transition them. But I have, my only touch of regret as a sub-point I told them is there are a few people that, frankly, I just think we took too long. We let it drag on longer than we should have. And by the time we finally had the conversation to bring separation, they knew it, we knew it. Everyone knew that this was the right decision. It was a way of caring for them and shepherding them through that and helping them land on the backside of it. But I concur with you. Many churches, especially, they will drag it out for years. And before they know it, they've spent all their personnel money on staff that maybe they're not fully competent, or maybe they have a bad attitude, which is even worse, and they are eroding the ministry they were hired to build up. So I'm concurring with you. Point number two, Dan.
Yeah, I believe strongly in hiring the person and potential, not necessarily the position and the pedigree. So I'm looking for a world-class leader to onboard into the church or into the organization. So I'm, again, character's king, and potentiality's king to me. I want to see what they can do, what they're capable of, maybe not where they are currently, versus just hiring the position or just hiring the pedigree or the resume. I think sometimes we look at a resume and say, boy, on paper they look brilliant, but in person you're just like, wow, you know, they're ether, they don't have the necessary energy, the tenacity, the velocity to get things done, which you need in a healthy church context. And so, yeah, it's absolutely critical to summarize point two, to hire the person and their potential rather than just their resume. Another just sub-point there, Jason, I would say that, you know, I always try to hire for pain and not for pleasure. There are a ton of good guys out there. But I want them to really have a place to serve, a place to deploy their leadership, and that there's a real need within the organization. So I'm willing to pass on a good guy. I'm willing to pass on a great guy that comes through, but I don't have a place for him on the team. I don't have a job for them to do. I don't have a ministry for them to build. So I think we've got to be willing to do that as well. So that's a sub point to hiring the right person, is the hire for pain and not just for pleasure because he's a super guy, super friend, you know, but that there's a real need in the body. As we move into the third principle, I think this should be patently obvious, but it doesn't seem to be in the local church context. If you sign someone better than you, then hire them. I think our natural reflex is to kind of keep the team below us so that we're kind of at the top of the organization and we're at the summit point, and then everybody kind of works underneath us. It's kind of a natural response to do that. I'm a contrarian here. I find someone better than me, I want to hire them. I instinctively want to hire that guy because I'm looking for thoroughbreds. I'm looking for kind of racehorses in gospel ministry that will build healthy churches. It is true, and I borrow this from Apple, that A-level leaders hire A+. That's their natural go-to. They appreciate them, they recognize them, they're energized by them, and they're not threatened by them. However, B-level leaders will atypically hire C+. So they hire down. Where A's hire up, B's will hire down. So I think you should not be threatened in the local church as a senior leader or as an elder or as an associate pastor. If you find somebody highly competent, highly capable, man, you need to hire them. That's a go-to hire there.
That's a good word. There's a fourth tip you have for us. What is that?
I believe you ought to always check references. And more than references, references of references. So everybody is going to produce some kind of material about what they've done and where they've been, and I think that's a helpful category to look at, the resume, right? And they're going to put in there a section on references. Well, the people they put on their reference sheet should be, you know, fans. They should be obviously, you know, supportive, compliment their skills and their abilities. So what I try to do when I interview references, and I think you ought to do your homework and check every reference, but I ask the reference for a reference. So I'm going another layer deeper into their life and into their experience, right? So that I can do appropriate homework. So I'm not just taking the obvious, you know, person on the resume, but the level below that, the reference of the references. So that's
important. And that is so important. And I was given a good word along those lines years ago. Always get your reference in person or over the phone, not via letter or email, because people will be far more extensive and far more comfortable telling you things in person or over the phone they would ever be willing to put in print. But I got to tell you, I'm astounded at how few churches actually call references. And over the years, as I've served in different roles within churches, pastors and interim pastors, where you'll have someone, you'll just have to let go for an objective moral reason. And then you'll hear 3 months later, 6 months later, they're pastoring a church or serving on staff at another church. And there's a part of you, you're kind of relieved that that church didn't call because, you know, you would have to really, you know, unload it on that person. However, you think, this is how recklessly irresponsible for a church to call someone, to hire someone without ever even calling a reference as to why they were let go from the previous place of employment.
Yeah, it is crazy. And you're right. It happens every single month across our churches. So it's kind of a sad place. I'd also a footnote, Jason, just that I think a good place to look and to sniff around is in social media or new media, because it's such a permanent record. You know, I just want to see how they talk. I want to see how they, because that's a public context. I want to see how they talk. I want to see where they go. I want to see what they are looking at. And I think sometimes people aren't the brightest in these situations, and they just post anything, or they have these snarky moments and fly off the handle. Well, I think you're going to get a good indication of what they're going to be like on a team by watching and reviewing, you know, over even a sustained period of time, their social media. So that's just a footnote for free there, but I think it's an important one.
All right. Well, look, our producers are telling me we got to keep moving here. We got about 5 minutes left, and it looks like about 6 tips to get through. So let me toss it back to you.
Okay, let me kind of race through these here a little bit, but I think every institution has a culture, every church has a culture. So if you want to preserve culture, you hire within. This is number five. If you want to change the culture, you hire outside. These are just kind of axiomatic principles there. Number six, I would absolutely use personality and kind of DNA testing tools. I think they give us an indication of what you're going to get. So, like, for example, a Strength Finders would be a good tool for you to deploy. So check their personality, check their DNA. Do they have the necessary, you know, leadership, you know, apparatus and how they think through leadership? Number seven, I'm always super clear and have high expectations. I want to have clear expectations and high expectations. In other words, when you come on my team, I demand excellence. I think some churches need to learn this lesson. They need to demand excellence. If you're going to do it right, do it for the glory of God. And I think that's rooted in Scripture, 1 Corinthians 10:31. Whatever you do, whether you eat or drink, two mundane things, do it for the glory of God, right? And so having high expectations, you're clear with those. They understand that as you're onboarding them into the ministry there. Also, number eight, I ask lots of questions. And I hope to ask lots of good questions and use, you know, collaboration in the interview process. So not only am I asking questions, but other team members are asking questions of them. And in particular, I'd love to just hear them talk. I think you can reveal a ton about someone's talking. I'll often just throw them a softball and say, okay, tell me about something. You know, tell me about, you know, baseball. Tell me about anything. Pick the topic. Just throw it at them. Let them pick the topic, you know, how to roast coffee. And just see how they talk, how they articulate, how they think. And if you listen, you'll learn.
Yeah, not asking yes or no questions, but asking how questions and why questions that really position them and really force them to flesh themselves out.
Absolutely. I'm a lean organization guy. I don't believe in just adding people for sake of adding people. We've already mentioned that. But when we do add them, I believe in paying well. I think that's number nine. I double honors in the text of Scripture in 1 Timothy 5. I don't want to be cheap. If they're, you know, a world-class leader, I want to pay them in a world-class way. So I'd rather pay more and operate lean as an organization than have a ton of people paying them mediocre salaries.
Yes.
Number 10, I think you got to inspect what you expect. So as you know, I'm going to have high expectations, but I'm also willing to follow up on that. So I don't just give them a list, say, do that, you know, don't drop below this, this is subpar. I'm going to give them high expectations. I'm going to come back and reiterate those. I'm going to inspect those. So for me, with my teams, I'm doing quarterly check-ins, and then an annual 360-degree review of how they're doing. So they're hearing from me on a regular basis. And then annually, I believe in spending an extended time and just kind of walking them through, almost in a kind of discipleship context and feel to it. I mean, every part of their life, family, you know, work, the whole package, because I'm concerned about the whole man and them being an integrated leader and all that comes together.
Word of commendation for you. You do that well. You've seen you do that with others, and you've done that with me in past years, and so I commend you for that. All right, we got just a few moments left. Why don't you button this up with maybe a final tip or two?
Yeah. I think this is it may be small in some people's minds, but for me, I think on a team and a local church staff or a ministry, I think you ought to be friends first and then kind of co-laborers second. And the reason I state that is because you will be more concerned about a breach in the friendship, you know, by trying to get your way in the organization or to try to get something passed through. You're not willing to put your relationship on the line. So if you have a deep friendship with these brothers, then you're not gonna send them a nasty email. You're not gonna be snarky in a meeting because your relationship with them trumps your co-labor professional ministry status. And so for me, friends first, co-laborers second is the right priority and the right mindset. So finding, nurturing, recruiting, onboarding, pastors, associate pastors, it's a big deal. It is absolutely critical path to building healthy churches.
Dan, this has been so very helpful. And, man, I couldn't have asked for a more helpful half hour, even for myself and for so many who are listening who are seeking to lead their church well. And, again, many preachers, they find preaching very easy, very natural, and other aspects of pastoral ministry relatively intuitive and simple. But hiring and hiring the right people can vex most anyone. And so you have brought light to this topic of great consequence, and you have just given us much to take away from this conversation. Dan, it's been a light to have you on Preaching and Preachers. Thank you for your friendship. Thank you for your ministry at Southern Seminary. And I just pray that the Lord will bless you in every way and to the fullest measure all that he's entrusted to you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.